Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you now? You think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? You think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking. Chris, shrinking, nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like those Sheikins and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip-hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride bands and say MC for hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got some rappers with that cold broke face. They tour around the world, then they going no place. My KRS one moves at his own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do you think
they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals. What a spectacle. They get mad when I say I and God are identical. You better get on your knees and praise them. These conspiracy theory rappers, I'll blaze them too. Ooh, deja vu. You seen this all before, me slaying your crew. I'm known by all the kids. I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did. People don't stop calling Chris for gigs, cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid. Me getting bullshit. I can't even count all the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot, me and the ice can't get close.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Real revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame, but the airwaves is a shame, and the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we are insane. Like we are to blame for society's pain. Like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
What's going on, everybody? Jimmy Underground Radio Network. Hope I'm coming in loud and clear for you all. Today we're going to be celebrating the anniversary of the death of Harold Washington. I had an opportunity to go to the Harold Washington Cultural Center today and lay a wreath, hanging out with my mom and a bunch of Martin Luther King Republicans, had a good time. Sorry for the loud noise here. My daughter's getting live with the basketball. So what we're going to do is play some Harold Washington. I hope I got this in order. I'm going to play Harold Washington in Chicago tonight and what happened to his life.
You talked about that problem, and here is a clip we want to show from that speech.
We shouldn't be confused about the nature of the political battle. Don't be confused about the nature of the political battle. This political battle is not about race. It is about money and power and morality and the sustenance and preservation of a democratic system. That's what this fight is all about. Only that, and nothing, I mean nothing less. has an old way of doing things which relies upon political patronage and inside contracts, and a new way which is based on merit and merit alone.
Now, Mr. Mayor, you described it, it seems to me, very aptly. You got to the point that it's a power struggle. And somebody who's from out of town watching this in a hotel room this evening, listening to the first part of this broadcast, might say, that man has really got his act together. I read all this stuff about economic development in the newspaper and 10 or 20,000 new jobs and everything he's just described. He's really going. And yet, you've got to go to the city council. You don't seem to have a majority in the city council. And the city council doesn't seem on many occasions to be disposed to act your way. What are you going to do about that now that you've got all these programs up?
Continue to develop and present those matters to the council. It's my job to propose. It's theirs to dispose, hopefully, and not in an obstructionist manner. So we will continue to pour in these various bills and suggestions to the council. But let me first disabuse anyone of the misconception that the council has destroyed entire programs. No, we have gotten 99% of our legislation through.
But you haven't gotten key appointments through. I mean, you've got a quorum crisis on some of your commissions.
You better believe it. It's a serious matter. As a matter of fact, it's one of the disturbing things about the opposition. It's not that it's opposition. We welcome progressive and positive opposition, but there is obstructionism. And it's been made clear by several of the leaders of the 29 that they're going to sit on those appointments and don't care what happens.
But, Mr. Mayor, with all due respect, have you done everything that you can to cooperate? I mean, let me give you a couple of examples. Alderman Burke, who will be here later this week to critique your economic plans, suggested that maybe it would have been a nice thing had he seen some of those plans before they were released to the press. The other day, on Monday, when you went out and made the announcements, the 15th Ward Alderman later told a reporter from Channel 2 that it might have been nice if you would have acknowledged him verbally while he was standing there behind you. How do you evaluate your own legislative finesse?
Exemplary. Planted. Schooled, open, fair, inclusive.
You let these people know in advance.
No chief executive gives his program to the leader of an opposite group. That is ludicrous and insane. And the mayor of the city of Chicago doesn't do it. The governor of the state doesn't do it. The president of the United States doesn't do it. And to impose that kind of a standard upon this mayor is totally bereft of any understanding of the political process. You just do not do it. If he wants to see my legislation, he must merit seeing it and act in a cooperative manner such would induce me to do so. You don't go to your opposition and say, will you look at my program and approve of it? That's insane.
It seems to me that if you have nothing to hide, the consultation with the opposition, which would say to the people of this city, I'll go any distance to cooperate. Here's my paper. Take a look at it. Feel free to criticize me. You're an open man. Why not do that? You have nothing to hide.
I do that eventually when the product is complete and we push it to them. And it's their job to peruse it, analyze it, dissect it. That's their role. Just don't merge these roles, because if you merge the roles, you do a tremendous disservice to the body politic.
Well, then here's a headline from the New York Times on Sunday.
The political nature is simply this. There is a separation between the executive and the legislature in the same sense that there is a separation between the politician and the press.
But there's consultation all the time.
You get the consultation. You present a product. It's their job to go into it. We send down department heads to discuss every line, every issue, every nuance. Don't impose upon this chief executive a standard that has been imposed on no other chief executive.
But maybe there's a situation here which requires you to walk an extra mile. Alderman Podolyak, who was coming on very strong for the last several months, has been making the most sweet, conciliatory statements.
What mile did he walk? All he's got to do to show that he wants to cooperate is to walk into the council and release those appointments. Period. Give me the courtesy of at least waiting till he reads my material before criticizing it. To say I want to meet with the mayor means absolutely nothing. To say you want peace means absolutely nothing. Peace has ingredients, and you can spell those ingredients out in terms of overt acts of behavior. There have been none. Every piece of legislation I have even brooded about is discussed and criticized. For example, I released yesterday parts of the economic development program before they could read it. It was strident criticism, nuances to the effect that I was being unfavorable to one district as to another. Have you read the program? No, sir, let's be realistic. This mayor is cooperative by nature. This mayor is cooperative by law. But this mayor is not a fool. And I resent anyone implying that I should act a fool. Now, I'm going to be a chief executive. I'm going to be fair. I'm going to be sharing. I'm going to do my job to propose to the city council. And the city council's responsibility is to analyze and dispose. And they have plenty of time to do it. God knows they got plenty of time to do it. They've been looking at some appointments for 6 and 8 months. They looked at the appointment for the president of the Board of Health for 5 months. Here's a president trying to put this team together and deal with some serious health problems. Finally got just totally exacerbated and resigned. So behavior is what we're talking about, not words.
But couldn't you meet with Alderman Vidoliak and Alderman Burke?
On what grounds and for what purpose?
On the purpose of acknowledging that you have a standoff and that you need to bring this city together, and if you have to do it in a summit meeting, do it in a summit meeting.
It doesn't warrant a summit meeting. A summit meeting means nothing. Unless there's a tight agenda, there's nothing to talk about. What are we going to talk about, politics? I'm not interested.
I think you have to get together and talk before you can talk about what you're going to talk about.
I think those who advocate that have to be realistic about this. What do you want me to do, go in and divide the city in terms of terrain, in terms of issues, in terms of time? That's not going to happen. I submit to you, Ms. Calloway, that if the opposition, and God knows I want them to be peaceful and quiescent and supportive, if they want to do that, demonstrate it by behavior. I just gave you a good example.
Talking about behavior, we have promised phone calls this evening for you, and we have many of them, and we'll be right back with those calls after this. Let's take our first call. You're on the air with Mayor Washington.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Mr. Mayor, how are you? My name is Lester Hemingway.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to do two things. First off, I want to congratulate you primarily for sticking to your pledge to take a balanced approach to governing the city, and for your approach to dealing with the political struggles. I think you should be commended on both counts. A couple things just happened. Today. First, that Edmonds family moved out of the 10th Ward. And secondly, there was an announcement tonight that I guess white ethnics are planning to meet to draft an agenda that they feel that you should be obliged to address. And I'm just wondering how you think that these kinds of behaviors will influence your ability or your plan to move the city in a different direction.
Yes, let's get your comment on the Edmonds family first.
Well, on the Emmons family situation, obviously it's a travesty on common sense and justice. It's inhumane. One would have thought we would have gotten out of that kind of
condo. This is a family on the far east side of Chicago, black family in a predominantly white neighborhood.
Predominantly white neighborhood, which has been bombarded by local people, presumably, and harassed them in the enjoyment and peace and tranquility of their home. We provide police protection for the family. They decided to move. We've been helpful in terms of our housing department in trying to assist them in moving. We've been in contact with the superintendent of police. We're going to try to get to the root of it and do whatever has to be done. In other words, these people will be protected, as all people have a right to be protected in the tranquility of their home. It's unfortunate. It's unfair. This is what has really blighted this city.
The race is an issue in this city very much.
With some people. That's to overdo it. With some people. There.
In fact, on Channel 2 this evening, I think you suggested that the alderman of the 10th Ward, Alderman Vidoliak, might take some indirect responsibility for the kind of climate that exists there.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor that point. People can draw their own conclusions. Insofar as the ethnic group meeting, I'm going to assume that any time a group meets pursuant to this protection for the family. They decided to move. We've been helpful in terms of our housing department in trying to assist them in moving. We've been in contact with the superintendent of police. We're going to try to get to the root of it and do whatever has to be done. In other words, these people will be protected, as all people have a right to be protected in the tranquility of their home. It's unfortunate. It's unfair. This is what has really blighted this city.
The race is an issue in this city very much.
With some people. Let's don't overdo it for some people. There.
In fact, on Channel 2 this evening, I think you suggested that the alderman of the 10th Ward, Alderman Podoliak, might take some indirect responsibility for the kind of climate that exists there.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor that point. People can draw their own conclusions. Insofar as the ethnic group meeting, I'm going to assume that any time a group meets pursuant to discussing government, they're going to be positive about it. And as long as it's positive, and hopefully it is, and they come out with positive suggestions, I will respond. If it is resorting to harassment or the kind of verbal and abuse that which we've seen too much in this area, then I obviously will not respond. But I'm going to assume that they will be positive what they suggest.
We have another call. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air with Mayor Washington.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry to bother you, sir. Thank you so much for listening to this question. Mr. Mayor, I'm a former employer of the Bureau of Inspectional Security for the state of Illinois. At that time, sir, I worked with Mr. Evans. It's well in fact, sir, that at that time, when you were a state senator under Governor Dan Walker, you sponsored many people for positions in that office. From my understanding, sir, you sponsored Mr. Evans. Is it true that you did that?
You're saying, are you asking if the mayor was a political sponsor of the man we were just talking about who's had the problems in the 10th Ward?
That's my question, sir.
Okay.
I don't know the man.
I called him today to give him some degree of comfort. First time I ever spoken to him. Don't know him.
Okay, do we have another call? Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead with Mayor Washington.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to ask about the program, the economic development program that the mayor is going to implement. What does this mean, and how does a person get more details about acquiring employment in this area?
Good question.
Just right to the core of it. If we have five goals, I'll be very quick because it needs real thorough discussion, John, as you can well imagine. We have five goals. The basic core goal is to expand employment through development primarily of the neighborhoods, but not exclusively of balanced development. For example, we were at 63rd and Western yesterday, and justifiably so, because we were commemorating the city's cooperation with several very large corporations, for example, Jewel and Sears, and also community groups, which we had gotten together and given them an easement over a sewer, which saved them a lot of money, permitted them to develop their parking lot, and thus save or prevent Sears from moving and bringing in new development in terms of Jewel. That kind of a cooperation created, or will create, about 400 jobs and retain another 200 or 300 jobs. This is the kind of initiative coming from the community, supported by the government, which retains, develops, and keeps jobs.
And you want to link that, as I understand, with the downtown development.
In some other instances, that will be linked. Now, that's just one issue. We have about 100 of such items, some which have been lying there dormant, in the pipeline, and we hope to develop these throughout the city. The development aspect comes in where, for example, at the Navy Pier, when the developers of Navy Pier were asked to simultaneously help to develop some neighborhood, Rogers Park or Oak Lawn or Bridgeport or Lawndale or Grand Boulevard, and they, with no coercion, agreed to do so. Unfortunately, the council in his wisdom decided not to go along. So that's just part of it. Basically and fundamentally, what we want to do is assist neighborhoods and the downtown development in creating job-producing industry and commercial enterprises, and also at the same time to improve the housing stock. For example, through ingenious mortgage devices, we do now have in-house the funds to provide for the rehabilitation of 6,000 units this year, and the building of additional 1,000 units.
Which also creates jobs as well as new housing or rehabilitated housing.
That's a truncated version of a very complicated program.
Let's go to the next call. Yes, you're on the air with Mayor Washington. Hello?
Yes, I'd like to ask Mayor, not really a political question, more of a personal question. On the talk shows and the interviews that I've seen you on, it seems as though the commentators always put you on the defensive, and it seems like you've never been given a fair chance. As soon as you come on the show, you have to stand up and defend your policies. How do you feel about always being on the defense concerning your policies and the situations that have been faced towards you so far?
Well, you're not talking about this show, because this commentator doesn't do that. But I must confess to you, I do detect in the voice and mannerism of some few interrogators a certain animus, which is somewhat shocking, a certain unbelievability in their attitudes that is somewhat disturbing. But I don't quirk from that, I shirk from that. It's the responsibility of the Fourth Estate to interrogate, to get the facts from political leaders. That's their job. I would hope some would do so in a more civilized tone like our present interrogator, but I'll just live with what I get.
Has your opinion of Walter Jacobson changed in the last 2 months?
Nope.
You said the other day, I thought you were just being kind of kidding about it, but maybe you were fairly serious when you said this isn't government by council or mayor, it's government by commentator.
It's just about that. And unfortunately, certain commentators have too much public sway, or we assume they do because they're allowed. It's unfortunate. I think the political commentary in this city has gone to a low ebb. The 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock news is about the lowest common denominator. I don't think anything positive comes out of it. Simplistic answers or questions, raising of the eyebrow with pointed jab just to be cute and upstaged are simply not constructive public debate. I'm a long, devoted, and skilled debater. I love it. There's a certain degree of fairness which is recalled for, and I don't want to debate anyone unless it moves from point to point. And I don't want to publicly debate anyone. It's just going to be a screaming and shouting match, and too many commentators get into that. Now, I don't want to go too far with that. They know of whom I speak. I think the listening public does. Certainly the interrogator, the one who just called, knows. I think the public can demand better of their media. I think they should demand better of their media. And if they ever invoke a standard on the Fourth Estate that they do on government, I think we'd lift the whole level up to several degrees.
Let's go to another call now.
We can stay on this one for more.
Another call? Yes, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on with Mayor Washington.
If we'd like to find out, please, what the mayor's attitude is towards the proposed ordinance coming up before the council tomorrow regarding the limousine and the taxi and I also believe that the bus usage fees.
Yes, the new surcharges which are being proposed for O'Hare.
And will that reduce any of the congestion?
It probably will. There is some hesitation on my part to discuss that too thoroughly. There's some more study that has to be made. It's my best guess that it will linger in the council a bit longer until it's looked at a little bit more thoroughly.
Mr. Mayor, I want to go to a story that I saw in the New York Times on Sunday, which has the headline, Chicago Mayor Regrets Time Spent on His Rival. Mayor Washington says it was probably a mistake to have spent so much time his first year trying to break the political power of his white rival, Alderman Vodoliak. But the mayor said he had used the fight and its racial overtones to appeal to his black constituents. That's by E.R. Schiff. And I haven't seen that. Is that an accurate portrayal of what you said?
I don't think I've ever described anybody as white.
No, you didn't. He did. He described the alderman as being white.
Well, evidently that writer took certain other liberties. I don't use the word white this or white that. I mean, they're self-evident, I think. Just like I often resent the word black mayor. I mean, it's self-evident.
Yes.
It's not necessary. It's a put-down. It's patronizing or whatever. That's not my language, no.
But
I regret being involved in a long, acrimonious discussion with anyone. It's self-defeating. I don't regret that the issue was drawn. It had to be drawn. I think I drew it as best I could, given the circumstances and the level of the people whom I was dealing with. No, there's no symbiotic relationship here. I don't dote on that kind of thing. I did what was absolutely necessary to dramatize as best I could for the people of this city who wanted to listen, the serious political and governmental plight we were in. And that's it. I have no animus connected. I don't dislike the man. I dislike his policies. I don't think he's fit to run government. I think he has run it too long. I think his day has come. And that's it. And I'm not going to make peace with that. It's a matter of integrity, high integrity. This city has been woefully mismanaged over the past 4 years, maybe 8. And people called a halt. They want a part of their government. They want it open. They want it fair. They don't want cabals. They don't want inside doctors. They don't want non-bidding. They don't want favoritism. They want everybody to get a chance at it. This mayor offers that chance. It's tough. We'll continue to fight for the good of the people of this city.
We're out of time. And Mayor Washington, thank you very much for being our first guest on Chicago Tonight. I'm John Calloway. Good night. Broadcast. As you know, we've been celebrating this past month the 25th anniversary of Chicago Tonight, and we thank all of you for your support of the gala, and we hope that you have enjoyed the various clips of Chicago Tonight that we've been playing over the past couple of weeks. Now, tonight, we're going to show you the very first broadcast of Chicago Tonight. That was on April 24th, 1984, and the interview was with then-Mayor Harold Washington. And this was appropriate because Chicago Tonight was born of the station's interest in covering the great political revolution of Harold Washington. So here now is the first Chicago Tonight broadcast.
Yesterday, Mayor Harold Washington unveiled stage one of his economic development plan for Chicago. It focused on the revitalization of the neighborhoods and promised to create or save 10,000 jobs. Will the plan deliver what it promises? That story on Chicago Tonight with John Calloway. Chicago Tonight, Mayor Harold Washington explains his economic plan for Chicago, and he answers your telephone calls at 591-7250. And now your host, John Calloway.
Good evening and welcome to this first broadcast of Chicago Tonight. And Mayor Washington, thank you very much for being our first guest on this broadcast.
Pleasure, Tom.
You go before the City Council tomorrow, and you will unveil a series of ordinances which deal with the North Loop development. What's in that package?
It's a very ingenious financial device called tax increment financing, which simply means you take the taxes you would have collected and pour them back into the property to help finance and provide equity capital. It's a somewhat ingenious operation. It has gotten the North Loop program out of mothballs and onto the track. We're quite enchanted with it.
What will we see? We're talking about hotels, a shopping center, what?
We're talking about hotels, a shopping center, and all the accoutrements that go with it on that North Loop area. If successful, and we have every reason to believe it will, it would increase the tax base 11 times in that one particular site. It's just a marvelous operation.
How many jobs would go into an area like that?
It's hard to estimate. Most projections are just that. But we would estimate that in the construction area, there would be a couple thousand jobs involved. If you track it all out permanently, maybe 3,000 jobs minimally for that just at one site then.
Right, now what was the breakthrough on this? Because this thing has been up, it's been down, it's been back, it's been forth. What happened? What was the breakthrough?
The financing. No one could come up with it. UDAG funds, urban development block grant funds weren't sufficient. There was a tax assessment abatement which was tried, but county assessor Hines said it just wouldn't fly. The citizens were paying too much. It needed some ingenious financing, and Liz Hollander, our planning commissioner, came up with that financing.
Now, this has been done in other cities, is that correct?
Yes, it's been done in other cities. It's not the thing done. It has a certain degree of an orthodoxy about it, but it's sound. It'll get a spirited discussion and debate in the council, but it's a sound package. But it awaited the person who had the genius to just marshal capital in a different way.
Who will be bidding for the hotel space?
Americana has backed out, but there are several people that are in the offing. We're very satisfied that that we will get the...
You have at least two principal bidders?
Yes.
And will there be a shopping mall developed across from Marshall Field?
That's correct.
And what's the timetable for this?
We want to break ground next year.
What is the timetable on the legislative aspect of it? You introduce the ordinances tomorrow. You need what kind of action by when?
Well, there's a tight timetable. I would assume that in light of the seriousness of it, the council will get right to it. We would hope it would wind its way out of the council inside 30 days. We'll be on track. The time frame, though tight, is not inordinately so. We're very optimistic about it. We think the council will be. There's no question it will work.
All right, so you've got the North Loop back on track, you're saying.
Yes.
Now there's this thing called the South Loop, and there's the public library, and we have reports. And I don't know whether they're true or how timely they are, that you've got a major announcement to make about the public library.
Well, I have no major announcement to make. I have signed on tentatively, or had signed on tentatively, to the Goldblatt site. The only reason I hesitated because many people in my cultural affairs committee and transition team were not totally happy with it. But they concluded, as did I, that we spent so much money into it up front before I came into office, it would be foolhardy to turn around.
You're in how much? $10 million?
At least that. We awaited, of course, the new library board, and those members are now pending in the council, and we felt it was their responsibility to pass on that before it got a final determination. I'm optimistic. I know it's going to happen, but we want the new library board members to deal with it.
You say you know it's going to happen. In other words, we are going to have the Goldblatt's building become a big central library, which will anchor the South Loop.
As a consensus across the board, that's the thing to do. We're going to go ahead.
All right. Now, tomorrow you also have a World's Fair piece of business you're going to deal with at the council.
Yes.
What's going to happen there?
We're going to introduce that to the council tomorrow. The intergovernmental contract, which was brooded about quite heavily, and which was the centerpiece to protect the citizens of the city of Chicago from inordinate taxation or service fees, to protect them in terms of displacement, both in terms of residential, commercial, industrial property, to give them some semblance of protection in terms of first shot at these jobs, to make certain that contracting, you know, that comes to Chicago, the construction, the professional, the services, all of these tenuous matters which came from the neighborhoods, which would have been thoroughly and vocally expressed by the neighborhood people, had to be transmitted into a workable contract that took time. We would labor that and continue to labor it until we worked it out. Finally, we hammered it out. It's before the council.
So what happens tomorrow?
Well, it'll be submitted to committee. Chairman Stone of the Special Events Committee has indicated his preference for it. He's supportive of it. We're optimistic about it. There's a tremendous pressure for it. We think it's good. There's still a knotty question after it passes of financing it, and that's going to be a knotty, knotty question. But the General Assembly will have to deal with that. So we have gone, at this point, through stage two. The first one was getting the authority, interim financing, now the intergovernmental agreement, and finally the financing, and we hope to wrap that up before the 1st of July.
What's your veto tomorrow?
The veto deals with a line item appropriation to fill a spot which we had vacated pursuant to the Shackle decision. The first deputy of our department was not the man for the job. Clearly a decision-making policy position. We opted to replace him as one of those discretionary jobs that the Shackman decision gave us. The matter was gone to court. We had to give 7-day notice. The judge entered a temporary restraining order, set it down for trial. We lost the trial. We have appealed that case. We think we will win it. In the meantime, the council, by virtue of the judge's decision, restored the pay. We feel this is an executive matter. We know it's an executive matter. The council did it, notwithstanding my wishes that it not be done. We're going to veto it and veto it with gusto and send it back to the council. And also, we support the Shackman decision, half in front of. We are opposed to patronage.
But you want some leeway to make your appointments for the executive part of
this. You've got to have some Lebensraum. You've got to bring on your team or you cannot be accountable. And one of the main disappointments of this administration at this point has been the slowness by which Judge Boer has resolved those matters. We have not been able to bring our people on. Now, we're not firing people across the board, but we insist that we must have our team in place so that can be accountable. We do not want in sabotage to continue. We don't want slovenly work. We want expert work with people.
Are you getting sabotage?
To a limited extent, we are. It's clear. We have
what forms does sabotage take from people that you can't get out,
well,
that you want to get out?
It takes all forms of sabotage, all forms. For example, we come in with a program which needs a certain amount of quietness and confidentiality in its initial stages so that we can resolve the matter. Oftentimes, this is leaked prematurely, and it creates some serious problems, political and otherwise. Other times, there's certain individuals who are simply not producing, deliberately not producing. We know who they are. We're not after good employees. We have retained and promoted many employees whom we inherited, but there are certain people who simply cannot function under the vigorous kind of administration that this city needs and which I was elected to provide for them.
Mr. Mayor, one of the other concerns of this city, as you know, is race relations, and recently, during your State of the City address, you talked about that problem, and here is a clip that we want to show from that speech.
We shouldn't be confused.
Yeah, I kind of had the tapes in reverse, so the first tape I should have played, the last tape I should have been the first tape, but I'm trying to do is play a bunch of hair washing memories for you all. So what I'm going to do is, I can't take a commercial break, I'm still in my daughter's game. How about bring another hair washing extra from you? We don't know how it sounds, come out of the studio right now, but let's just check this out. And I should be in the studio another 10 minutes, everybody. 347-838-9825, hold all calls. I'll be with you in 30 minutes.
That was the time when you said Chicago and someone would respond, like a Pavlovian dog, segregation. Or you said Chicago, and people talked about the 1968 riots. Or said Chicago was where everyone went who didn't want to be anybody. But now, anywhere in the world you go, Israel, Egypt, Rome, Shanghai, Tokyo, Nairobi, Zimbabwe. Now, you go to any of those places and you say you're from Chicago, you know what they'll say to you? How's Harold?
Harold won against the odds. Died with an enlarged heart. Not a broken heart. It was enlarged by three. Because he had to have a big heart to make room for all of Chicago.
Ashes to ashes, dust.
We want to do something. We're not going to let this thing die. You know, we're not going to let the dream die.
Martin Luther King had a dream. Harold had a dream.
He was the wave of the future then, and he's the wave of the future now. Because Harold carefully built the leadership in the city that was so democratic, was so fairly put together, that nobody could complain.
He believed that he could achieve a measure of equity or fairness through the political system. He didn't rely on religion or morality. He relied on political power.
I would say that I think he managed to deracialize politics in Chicago when he was elected one-on-one. Where it wasn't just that everybody will always vote for their own clan, and that's just the way it's going to be. You know, after all, it's only been in 4 years ago that Boston elected its first Italian mayor, which was a major breakthrough in Boston. And I think that made a difference. The other, I think, is that he was associated with being successful. Other black mayors before him had been associated with declining cities. They'd gotten control as the cities were on their way out, and he's begun a string of successful black mayors around the country, with Mike White in Cleveland being an example, Kurt Schmoke in Baltimore, a number of black mayors who are now viewed as successful mayors, not simply figures who are coming in a declining period of a city.
What Harold did now has been enlarged and held in people's memory. I mean, Harold is a legend now.
Harold Washington was not the first black mayor of a major northern city. Those honors went to others like Carl Stokes of Cleveland, Coleman Young of Detroit. But those cities were largely abandoned by white flight. Chicago was different. The population in 1983 was equally divided in three: black, white, and Hispanic. It was one of the richest cities on earth. No one suspected that a black political wizard from the South Side had his eye on that prize since he was a boy.
There have been 41 mayors before me. When I was growing up in this city and attending its public schools, it never dawned upon me, nor did I dream, that the flame would pass my way.
Harold used to refer to us as being two households but one family. There's the Washington Brood and the Price Brood. When Mom married his father, Roy, and her name was Bertha Jones, comes from Southern Illinois. And from that union, there were three boys and a girl. It was athletic, extremely good looking, okay. You know, he had no problem with the ladies at all.
He was brilliant. A cafeteria reader, a man that I can remember when we were, I was maybe 12, he was about 10, and we were playing sandlot baseball, and I never saw him without a book.
He always seemed to have had something a little special above everyone else. Softball, he was the genius. Marbles, he was the genius. I don't care where you went, he just seemed to have been on a plateau just a little above the norm. And of course, we all admired him because I think he placed first in the city and then went downstate. And as I vaguely remember, I think he placed third downstate without practice, without practice.
My father was a Methodist minister and the son of a Methodist minister, but he was also a lawyer and a politician, a very peculiar, strange combination, which breeds a kind of an individual in which there's a high moral tone in the family, a certain discipline, a certain, if you believe it, prove it attitude, certain desire for excellence and a demand for excellence in terms of how you comported your life.
We were out of high school before we learned that his father was a lawyer and his stepmother was a social worker, which of course was big time for the 30s, you see. But he was just one of the rag muffins of the street, an urchin of the street. He never played above that. Whereas he was definitely, as he said, close to the manor born, middle class, upper middle class.
My wife was associate professor of psychology, teaching at Roosevelt University. In her class was Harold Washington. And although she doesn't remember all her students, she remembers him as being outstanding. She says that he showed signs of leadership. And one day, there was a sign in the room that there was an election for the student government. And she said to him, because she recognized his leadership qualities, that you ought to run for that. And he did, and he was elected president of the student government.
He had a great sense of humor, a great sense of humor. I can remember he was at my house one night and we had had dinner. And my den was at the other end of the house. And when after we were doing the dishes and I was going up to the den to look at TV, because he was supposed to be up there looking at TV, I get to the entrance hall and all of a sudden he jumps out of the closet to scare me. Well, he scared me so much until I hollered and it scared him. So we both wound up in, but he thought that was hilarious.
And the class behind me was Harold Washington. And when I graduated, of course, I was only black graduating, and in the year behind me after I graduated was Harold Washington, was only black in this class.
He was a classmate of mine in law school. We were both members of the, I suppose I have to acknowledge it, of the class of June 1952 at Northwestern University School of Law. And as a matter of fact, he was the treasurer of what we then called the Junior Bar Association, the Student Bar Association, during, I guess that would have been our last year in law school. So I go back for many, many, many years. And we always had, by the way, a kind of a marvelous way of explaining all of this. I don't know whether Harold started it or I started it, but we said if you look at the June 1952 graduating class from Northwestern Law School, there are only two faces that stand out, his and mine.
It's difficult for me to sit and describe to you what it was like in 1948 and 49, 50, 51 in law school. For example, when the law firms and the judiciary come out and interview for positions, they didn't interview us. We were not even on the board to be considered. Writing for the law review, we weren't considered. There were things that changed since then, but those are the turbulent experiences that we had. We came out of law school. We didn't have the benefit of going to clerk for this judge or that justice or going to that law office. In fact, when we came out of law school,
right here, I think we have some audio problems right here. So we try to
benefit of going to clerk for this judge or that justice or going to that law office. In fact, when we came out of law school, LaSalle Street wouldn't even rent blacks office space. And we remembered those things. And we were happy that the good Lord in his infinite wisdom saw fit to put us in a position to do something about those evils in our society. And Harold addressed them and did the best he could to eradicate them.
What I did was deliberately, calculatedly, chose an area, a vehicle that I thought I could do some good. That vehicle was the Democratic Party, I thought, for several reasons. One, my people were in the Democratic Party. I didn't put them there. They went there because they felt the same way I felt. But here represents a vehicle through which we can do some social advancement and better our life. Same reason other people make decisions. Not in terms of the best, but in terms of what is available and based on their judgment, which appears to them to be the best. So I entered it. But I have always maintained this feeling about that party. I am not loyal to a structure. I am loyal to people, and I am loyal to an organization to the extent that it is fair to people.
He started moving up the elective ladder by state rep, state senator. He had an independent streak, but no way was he part of the original reform movement in Chicago, as small and as insignificant as that was.
I was a corporation counsel for 4 years in the city of Chicago. I was a secretary to Congressman Metcalf when he was alderman. I worked in the Metropolitan Sanitary District as a junior attorney. I spent my whole life in city government and city politics.
I was Washington's campaign manager when he ran for state representative in the 60s. We had a big party for him and invited Mayor Daley out, who in those days didn't come out on Sundays. I think this party was on a weekend. And he came out to wish Harold Washington well.
He was not a guy who ran in PACs social groups, and he had he would disappear at times. And our relationship was kind of amazing because in the office sometimes we were there 8, 9 o'clock at night. And sometimes on the weekend, on Friday nights, especially all night long, maybe I shouldn't. we had a friendly poker game, and we would sometimes be there all night.
And Washington was single at the time. He had been married. Well, he was married, but he was living single. And he knew a lot of people, and we went to a lot of parties in those days. I fell into the marriage fold, and that somewhat stopped, but we always worked politically together.
When I first met Hal, Hal was not the role model he was in the 80s. In the latter 60s, early 70s, Hal had some serious problems. He had a major accident, almost cost him his life, almost cost him the lives of others. He decided in 1970-69 never to drive again. So we became fast friends because I drove for him from 69 to 82.
He failed to file taxes for approximately 5 years. He was not evading taxes. He just didn't file.
But he was not a man who did not pay taxes. Harold's income was the legislature.
In any event, he let 5 years of taxes go, where the whole net difference was, I think, $500, between $500 and $1,000. And when they called him in on this, he could have avoided jail. He could have avoided serious conflict. All he had to do was appear once or twice, plead forgetfulness, exhibit some remorse. But the kind of stubbornness that was Harold, that was his blessing and his flaw, went to work there, and out of stubbornness, Harold virtually caused the judge to put him in jail.
I don't walk down the street with a sign on my back saying I didn't file income tax returns for certain years, nor do I slip through the night from shadow to shadow like a thief because of it. I paid the penalty for it. Judge Perry, when he sentenced me, said this to me, and I'll never forget it. And I think it bears here because it's not a special plea. It comes from a dispassionate person, one who heard all the facts. And he said to me, he said, I know your record, the same record you've read. You are a man who have dedicated yourself to public service. And from what I see, what has happened here is that you work so hard and assiduously at your chosen field that you have failed to and been neglected in your own personal affairs. He said, it's tragic. He says, it's something you can rectify.
if he had shortcomings, I think he recognized those shortcomings in himself. And during those years that some people call the wild years, Harold didn't really want to step out front. But after, I think, he got better control of his life and had started focusing on a direction that he wanted to go to accomplish things himself, not just for himself, but for others, then he changed.
He represented the coming together of two strains in the development of African-American politics in this country. You traditionally had the civil rights activists who stayed away from elective office, who didn't really participate. They were activists, they were community leaders, they were very often preachers. They stayed outside of the elective realm. Then you had those who more often than not had nothing to do with the civil rights agenda, who were there to parlay favors and play the patronage games and be part of the machine. These two tracks had been parallel over time. Harold broke that parallel and brought those two tracks together.
When he became state representative, that was an electrifying event. But by the time he became a senator, and he began to play a major role in our lives.
Through most of his career in the legislature, he went along. He went along with the traditional machine issues. He was very consistent, though, on the civil rights issues and the black-related issues.
Washington earned a record as a smart, often inspired legislator. After the death of Mayor Richard J. Daley in 1976, he ran for mayor, coming in third in a four-person race and winning only five black wards. In 1980, he ran for Congress and won.
He was not a man who took on a lot of quixotic campaigns. And I think he ran in 77 understanding he was going to lose by, you know, some substantial amount, you know, barring a miracle. But understood that historically at that time, the way blacks got to be mayors of big cities was to run and lose and then run again.
That experience became an underlying factor for the later run.
Besides a consummate campaigner, he was also a consummate legislator. He really loved the legislative process. He was in Congress. He'd gone there, had made an impact right away. The kind of tradition at the time was congressmen usually only got two assignments to committees. Because of his experience in the General Assembly, they gave him three. And the other thing that was happening was the reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act. They gave Harold the charge of being the leader and getting and building support for the Voting Rights Act around the country.
He knew the subject matter, and he was able to really be persuasive on the floor. If anybody reads the congressional record, he was a master. I mean, he studied it like a constitutional expert.
He left the Congress in the first few months and began to campaign. He said at that time he was thanking his constituency for having elected a congressman. But when in fact what we were doing was organizing for the mayoralty, he started, as you'll be proud to know, by going to laundromats. We did laundromats on Cottage, on King, on State, and Halston had all his mornings going to laundromats thanking females, when in fact we're in fact launching the mayoralty.
Back home in Chicago, Mayor Jane Byrne had lost the loyalty of African-American voters. Political activist Lou Palmer was promising, "We shall see" in 83. At the grassroots, the conditions were ripe for Harold Washington to lead a crusade.
Jane Byrne, from the moment she was elected mayor of the city of Chicago in 1979 in an upset, she assumed that someday Richard M. Daley was going to try to take her job from her. And she was obsessed with that. She was focused on Richard M. Daley as the only candidate that was ever going to wrest the mantle from her. And so she did things in Chicago, not known for their racial tolerance, to replace blacks that had been kicked off the school board. She did the same thing at the Chicago Housing Authority, which was almost 99% black. So she seemed to be going out of her way, frankly, to wave a red flag in front of the black community, because it was her belief that she would rally all the white voters, and that Rich Daley, you know, would be trying to get some black votes, and that he wouldn't be very credible in trying to get black votes.
Well, when Harold, out of courtesy, appeared at one of these pleb sites at Bethel AME, his whole persona, his whole gift, his charisma, just overwhelmed people. And it was decided that we had to persuade him to run, because it was obvious that he was the most popular and the most likely candidate to be able to run a good race.
Few of us said, well, maybe this might be another opportunity, since Jane Byrne is not the same as the machine. Daley, the old man, is gone. Blandick's been destroyed. This may be an opportunity again for a black to run.
He was the man that was sent here from somewhere, from some planet, somehow, and as we reviewed his life, we knew that he was the man to represent us.
Harold's feeling was, it may be, but there are too many holes. No money, no way to mobilize the people, to get them to come out and vote, and you need a massive street organization and street effort to do it.
And he also wanted to make sure that Daley and Byrne were going to go at each other. To say they didn't like each other would be an understatement. He saw the possibility, as I said at the time, of being the cream in a reverse Oreo cookie.
I have decided to be a candidate for mayor of Chicago.
I'm announcing my candidacy today for a second term as mayor.
I cannot watch the city of Chicago destroyed by petty politics and bad government. I have been urged by the earnest pleas of thousands of people to enter this race. Therefore, I hereby declare my candidacy for mayor.
As prosecutor, drug convictions rose by 25%. And as mayor, even more can be done to make our neighborhoods safe again.
So what's to keep us from making this candidate our next mayor? Nothing. Elect the one candidate qualified to be the mayor, Harold Washington.
We can all win.
Well, the public television station in Chicago, WTTW, felt very strongly that they should take the lead in organizing mayoral debates in 1983, and I was selected to be the producer and the chief negotiator representing WTTW in the three warring factions. When Harold Washington starred in that first debate and literally just lowered the boom on Jane Byrne in his opening statement, that was the defining moment. And just as John Kennedy used his first presidential debate to sort of define and make him respectable to people who maybe just viewed him as a lightweight United States senator, I think what happened in that very first debate is that a lot of middle-class blacks in Chicago, who perhaps had not really given Harold Washington an opportunity or a chance, they saw in that first debate that this was an African-American who was standing up there toe-to-toe with the son of the former mayor and the current mayor, and he whipped their butt that night.
There was this instant flash pride that just whipped through the black community, and you saw it as people walked down the street. I mean, they wore these buttons like badges of courage or something.
And from the point of that debate on, being responsible for the precinct coordinator, I could not keep up with the volunteers. It was almost like trying to herd cats.
It was a crusade that took on almost religious or gospel character. It was a duty. It became a sort of a civic religion, if you will.
Harold, he didn't change his pitch much. I would make the rounds with him whenever I could, as we went to the wards and to the Puerto Rican community and the gay community and the labor community and the churches. I can't emphasize the churches too much.
I believe in the powers of redemption, and I simply cannot believe in the God I worship that he would permit us to sit on this earth for 400 years, or rather in this country for 400 years, and suffer the indignities which we have suffered, piled time after time, high after high, and so heavy it has almost broken the backs of one of the most powerful people in this world.
And the people of Chicago united with Richard M. Daley to be the next mayor of Chicago.
Everybody.
All is
been a close observer of the political scene when I was at the University of Chicago. And I had much more than a passing acquaintance with Richard Daley, the mayor at the time. And although he and I were on quite friendly terms, warm friendly terms, I was under no illusion about the racial politics in the city. And, you know, in counting the votes, it just didn't seem to add up that anyone except a person of European descent would be able to seize the post of mayor.
Good evening. This is the CBS Evening News. Dan Rather reporting. The results of Chicago's three-way race for the Democratic nomination for mayor today took many in that city and the nation by surprise. Bob McNamara reports on the Illinois congressman who beat the incumbent, the name, the machine, and the odds, and now stands a good chance to become the first black mayor of the nation's second largest city.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next mayor of the city of
newsroom were delighted. The whites looked as if their mother had died. I mean, there was this great, in the Tribune, there was this great funk that just hung in the air. You could feel it. You could almost slice it with a butter knife. In the meantime, the few blacks that worked there, we walked around and we were so elated. But because of the general sour faces, we were afraid to show it. So we walked around professional. And we would go into a private room somewhere, someone's office, shut the door, and they go, yeah, yeah.
On that night when Washington won, and the night he claimed victory at the old McCormick Inn, and Jesse Jackson came to the podium, it was an absolute red flag to many white voters in Chicago. Even someone like Bernie Epton, who really gets unmentioned in these stories, who was all set to run as a Hyde Park white liberal against Jane Byrne, did a 180 and became the right-wing candidate of, before it's too late.
I have listened patiently to that clown in the radio and television, and I'm speaking to both clowns now, and I've had just about enough. If any one of you did what my distinguished congressman did, you'd still be serving time.
I tried to talk my brother out of it because I know my brother. He liked Harold Washington, and he didn't think he could be elected, but he was a gambler.
Epton, a distinguished legislator, lawyer, and businessman. Washington, found guilty of unlawfully converting clients' money to his own use and barred from practicing law for 5.5 years. Epton, honored repeatedly for service to his country and his community. Washington, convicted and jailed for repeated criminal tax law violations. The U.S. attorney said he didn't even file his returns for 19 consecutive years. Which one do you think should be Chicago's next mayor?
But in the meantime, you have racist white policemen feeding all sorts of garbage and handing out all sorts of racist literature, accusing Harold Washington of being all sorts of things, from a child molester to homosexual, things with big lips and bones through the nose and watermelons and spitting watermelon seeds. I mean, just very, very gloves off racist literature.
There was a real desperation on the part of some to stop his election, and there was a real desperation on the part of some to stop his election, and that's what made the 1983 election the most vituperative and emotional election that I've ever seen.
Harold was supposed to speak at St. Pascal's Church,
And there was this reaction from the white community, and I mean, there was this angry mob of white people. And as we're going in, someone had spray painted on the church, "Die, nigger, die," on the church. And it occurred to me that I was not in friendly territory.
Palm Sunday, 1983. Washington and former Vice President Walter Mondale tried to attend Mass at St. Paschal's Church on the city's northwest side. They were met by a booing crowd of Epton supporters and Right to Life demonstrators. Epton apologized, but the incident made national news.
Certainly, when you go to church, you certainly should be allowed to worship without the intrusion like that. And if there were supporters of mine, I apologize.
Oh, it was ugly. Epton played right directly into the hands of the people who were really a very small segment of the Chicago population, but a very vocal segment. And what was such a crime about this is that Epton was known to many of us around Harold. And throughout the entire campaign, he was calling every night in back channels offering personal apologies.
I voted for Jane Byrd in the primary, and I think she had her chance. She lost, and now it's time for Bernard Epton.
I want to name Mr. Epton because he's a man of integrity. Mr. Washington is a convicted criminal.
Hey, if he can't pay his taxes and he can't produce a service when he's a lawyer and he goes to jail, and how can you honestly ask a man like this to be a mayor?
I'm a Democrat, and I voted for Daley in the primary, and I'm going with Bernie Epton all the way.
That hurt Bernie terribly. Bernie was not a bigot. The press made him a bigot.
Bill Zimmerman was our media consultant, and he wanted to do an ad that really exposed the racism that was going on. And the strategy committee was divided. Some wanted to do it. Others thought that we would play into and offend some of our, liberal supporters if we responded to these issues of racism.
It was so controversial inside of the campaign that it was one of the few instances where we really asked Harold himself to come off the campaign trail and screen it. So he came in and he took a look at the spot and he said no, it should not run.
There are moments in our country's history of which all Americans are thoroughly and profoundly ashamed. One of those moments may be happening now, here in Chicago. When you vote on Tuesday, be sure it's a vote you can be proud of.
Lo and behold, I was just gotten home, laid back, and watched the news, kicked back in my bed. All of a sudden, the spot comes on television. I almost had a heart attack. I said, what in the world is going on? 2 minutes later, my phone's ringing. It's the candidate. How did that piece get on? I thought I killed that. Everybody's out here just stopping me in the street talking about that. We had a major storm on our hands.
And so after one day, we pulled it. And that was because, we had, this kind of turmoil.
We were behind, or neck and neck, I forget which, but the election was not in the bag. We had to dynamite these households in the lakefront. So we went for the grand bag strategy, and we were able to be successful. On that Sunday, we got the New York Times story, a cover story, in which Harold was featured. 11 o'clock that day, he was featured on Meet the Press. Luckily, Bernie Epton, his opponent, did not show up. So Harold had a complete run on national television for 30 minutes, which was wonderful. Then at 6, he was the lead piece on 60 Minutes.
Epton thought he could win with white votes alone. Washington added white liberals, Hispanics, and other minorities to his coalition. Everyone in Chicago chose sides.
I will initiate your reforms, but I charge each and every one of you, to rededicate your efforts to heal the divisions that have plagued us. Each of us must reach out in open arms. Together we will overcome our problems and restore Chicago to its proper position as one of the most dynamic cities in all the world. The whole nation is watching as Chicago has sent a powerful message. History! History was made tonight! Oh, yeah!
Washington won by 46,000 votes out of the 1.3 million votes cast. Three-quarters of Chicago voters came to the polls that day. An extraordinary 98% of African Americans voted for Washington. The inauguration ceremony at Navy Pier was the hottest ticket in town. There was a sense of history as Washington came to the stage. The 42nd mayor was sworn into office by his former law partner, Justice Charles Freeman.
Of the office of mayor of the city of Chicago.
That I will faithfully discharge the duties of the office of mayor of the city of Chicago.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Congratulations, mayor.
First thing you told me is to do no harm. You told me that the guiding principle of government is to do the greatest good. And your instructions, which I heard from neighborhood after neighborhood, said to be patient, be fair, be candid, in short, to continue to tell the truth. Business as usual will not be accepted by any part of this city. Business as usual will not be accepted by this chief executive of this group.
He threw down the gauntlet at that inauguration, indicating that business as usual would not continue. He, though she was on the platform, he openly castigated Jane Byrne. I was sitting in the front row and I saw her turn red, shocked, because he was there. It was not diplomatic at all. He was very open with what he intended to do. They immediately began to line up their forces. They were, of course, geared by racism and greed and insecurity. Because it was clear to them, at least, that they were not going to be able to control this man as they had Jane Byrne.
Well, it was open warfare. He came in and with a what he believed to be a mandate to change government, and he didn't have the votes.
Chicago has a strong council, weak mayor system. Washington's opponents had a 29-21 majority. To buy time, the new mayor dismissed the first council meeting.
The president recognizes Alderman Terrace.
I move we adjourn.
You heard the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Council is adjourned.
But led by Alderman Edward Podolak, the 29 took control and ignited a political firestorm called Council Wars.
We are looking at neighborhood against neighborhood. We are looking against race against race. We are making a decision that will make it impossible for the mayor of the city of Chicago to deal with the problems of the city because he will be fighting you, the members of the city council.
We want Harold here too, but he ran away.
Council Wars was fighting a race war and a political war by day and trying to run a government starting at 5:30 in the evening. We were in the trenches. Every day for a year and a half, you'd come in there and it was take no prisoners. Who could wreak the most harm to the... Who could outreact the other? I mean, it was tough, two-fisted chest.
Well done, Mayor, but I counter with this negotiated majority. Then take this grassroots support. I maintain my majority. Then I file a suit in court. But the decision is in my favor. You may have prevailed at this juncture, Vidoliak, but I will assiduously pursue your disestablishment. Perhaps, Mayor, but to do so, you must use the dark side of the clout. You must make deals and compromises. Never!
Harold was as tough and as hard-nosed a politician as you're ever going to find. He was cold. And that is not to denigrate him in any fashion. If you're going to survive in the business of politics, it's, as Harold used to say, politics ain't beanbags. And that's absolutely true. You're either going to play the game to its fullest or you're going to die in the game.
Talent in the wrong head. A vicious, angry man. Therein lies the rub. An absolute head, toe, unmitigated, full fleshy hustler.
Some of the things that that I did in those days, if I had the ability to change them, I probably would. But that's not life. You can't go back and change.
But it was rough, though. A lot of people were hurt. We had to do things that were, I remember we had to threaten to shut down our airport. We actually put in a doomsday shutdown plan. I mean, we took the city on one hell of a white knuckle ride for a year and a half. I mean, we scared America. I mean, it was a take no prisoners kind of a war. But we had to, because we were up against some adversaries who did not give us any quarter. And we had to win. And we did win.
And Alderman Vidoliak, who was the leader of the 29, rose, and the mayor glared at him and said, "For what purpose does the alderman in the 10th ward arise?" And he says, "Mr. President, I just want to thank you." He says, "Thank me for what?" "Well, a horse ran an aqueduct named Harold, and he won. So I just wanted to thank you for the tip." And everybody laughed, of course. And after the laughter subsided, Harold said, "If you were a gentleman, you would share your winnings." And, of course, everybody laughed. And after they finally stopped laughing, Vidoliak said, "That's all I've been trying to tell you for 3 years."
We inherited a city which was not bankrupt, but was in tremendous fiscal strain, long-standing fiscal stress, the rate maker said. We cleaned it up in 3 years, balanced the budget, laid off 8,000 people, got a good cash flow, changed the accounting system, and wound up with an increased bond rating, first time in 30 years the city had it.
People in Washington were asking me about balancing the federal budget, and they said, "Isn't that hard?" And I said, "That's nothing compared to balancing the Chicago city budget." So I said, "Members of Congress don't wear guns in the chamber, and in the city council, there are a lot of guns there that weren't being worn by active police officers."
1986 began with bad news. An FBI sting called Operation Incubator had snared several Washington officials and aldermen in a bribery scandal.
The U.S. attorney, who at that time was a man named Anton Valukas, that was a Republican, sent in a mole who was a murderer, who had been involved in all kinds of crimes, who had been investigated for murders in Wisconsin and Florida, and in fact was going to be, to my understanding, indicted in Florida until they came and got him, because he said he had some connections that he could go to Chicago and get Harold Washington.
They sent him into Chicago to try and, in effect, entrap some people on the mayor's staff. And in fact, they entrapped some aldermen. He spread money among some of the people in the mayor's administration.
And they indicted a number of people, myself included. And they tried to get to Harold. They asked me to get to Harold, quite frankly. And, of course, you know, my response to that was no way.
Harold always was confident that of his own integrity. He was never in politics for money. He was never in it for contracts. He was never looking for an inside deal for himself. And so that he had a confidence that carried through, that that no matter what anyone was attempting to do to him, whether it was bug him or entrap him, that he didn't have anything to fear because he hadn't done anything wrong.
The mayor had to terminate a department head, and I think that there were at least two or three aldermen who were indicted and sent to prison as a result of that. Again, that was a what I thought was a targeting of a very popular African-American mayor by the federal government.
Then, suddenly it seemed all the winds were in Harold Washington's column. Citing the Voting Rights Act that Washington had passed when he was in Congress, federal judges redistricted Chicago's wards. Minority voters got more aldermen, and the mayor won control of the city council. The mayor's reforms were finally voted on, and power was now firmly in the hands of Harold Washington.
Harold Washington was a reform mayor, and people forget that. The first reform mayor in our modern history. Reforming meant a lot of things, and I think what people want to do, particularly those who hated him, that now say nice things about him, is they want to leave the legacy of Harold Washington around personality, that he was bright, which he was, that he was articulate, that he was funny, that he was all these things, and he was all that and more. But the primary reason that Harold Washington was able to put together that coalition, and the primary reason that people all over the world still respect him, is that he had an agenda.
The mayor was absolutely committed to both racial and gender equality.
He had given more positions in City Hall to women, Latinos, more blacks than had ever been the case. I mean, positions of power.
No one, but no one in this city, no matter where they live or how they live, is free from the fairness of our administration. We'll find you and be fair to you wherever you are.
But Jane Byrne and Ed Verdoliak were still on the scene.
Jane Byrne had returned. Jane had a tremendous capacity for reinventing herself, and she had done a nice job of that in the months leading up to the mayoral primary. And so going into that race, it was really a serious race, the primary.
As current mayor and the previous mayor escalate their views of the past 8 years, the three other candidates seem to be left in the wind. That is Mr. Verdoliak, Mr. Hines, and myself.
How are you?
I remember sitting in Harold's office the day after the primary, and we were all exultant. And then Harold got somewhat melancholy, and he said, you know, here we are. I got 20% of the white vote, and we're happy about that because that was a breakthrough for us. He said, well, you know, I think I earned more than 20% of that vote. And he kind of paused. He said, ain't it a bitch to be a black man in the land of the free and the home of the brave?
But once that was over, most of the aldermen who had been part of the 29, who won re-election in 87, basically gave up. And Washington had a solid majority of 35 or 40 aldermen.
When people like me and others say, you know, Mr. Mayor, maybe you don't realize it, man, but you just gained about 25 pounds, you know. You take care of my security. You know, I'm taking care of me. Over a period of time, when you can defy your doctors and don't make your doctor appointment, when you don't buy your suits off the rack anymore, you know, people are making them for you. When you don't realize that eating late at night and then holding an hour conversation with somebody about some personal problem that further drains you from a full day's activity and then go to bed, that has a toll. It takes a toll over a period of time.
I'm going to leave it right there. I was going to go ahead and play another half an hour of the show, but I'm going to leave it right there and end it early. Let me do 2 hours. I'm going to sit back and reflect the great mayor of Washington. I guess we do miss you, so I'll see you tomorrow. Good night, everybody. May God be with you.
Jimmy, this is the place.